Science, learning, business, community. You. Welcome to ThinkWorks, the podcast for people who like to think, because thinking is the hardest work there is. Come with us on a journey into the world of ideas with your host, Darren Smithson.
Hello and welcome to ThinkWorks, the place where we do all the heavy lifting when it comes to thinking. And so today's episode is a slightly special one because this week my new book, Conspiracy, Waking Up to the Systems That Shape How You Think, Feel and Act, is published. And I think it'd be a good idea. I thought it would be a good idea to actually talk about some of the concepts and ideas in the book, what it is and what it isn't, and explain why it is important that we learn the critical skills that we need to actually find out if something is true. Now, given the title, Conspiracy, Waking Up to the Systems That Shape How You Think, Feel and Act, you might expect today's episode, therefore, to be all about conspiracy theories. And it is sort of, but really I want to talk about the questions that eventually become the beating heart of the entire book. A question that sounds incredibly simple: how do we know what's true? Because here's the problem. We're living in an age in which we have access to more information than almost any humans who have ever lived. And yet deciding what to believe doesn't seem to have become easier. If anything, it's become harder. So today I want to explore why. Why intelligent people can look at the same evidence and reach completely different conclusions. Why our brains sometimes find patterns that aren't really there. Why distrust can be healthy, but can also become a trap. And perhaps more importantly, how we can become better at deciding what deserves to have our belief. Because this isn't really an episode about conspiracy theories, it's about thinking. So let's begin with something rather strange. It's called the information paradox. For most of human history, information actually was scarce. Books were expensive. Knowledge travelled slowly. Libraries were limited. Experts were difficult to access. But today, I can take a smaller device out of my pocket and within seconds access scientific papers, historical archives, governmental documents, news reports, photographs, videos and opinions from millions of people, which all sounds wonderful, and in many ways it is, but it also creates a brand new problem. Because access to information is not the same as understanding it. Search long enough online and you can probably find someone supporting almost anything, and you can find even so-called experts disagreeing with other so-called experts. You can find stats that appear to contradict other stats. You can find photographs without context, clips taken from longer interviews, headlines designed to make you angry, and posts designed to make you afraid. And entire communities are being built around particular interpretations of events. So the problem has changed. Once the challenge was, where can I find information? Today the challenge is, which information should I trust? Now that is a much harder question. And there's another complication, because your brain is a pattern machine. Human beings are astonishingly good at detecting patterns. And that's a good thing, because pattern recognition helped our ancestors survive. If you noticed that certain clouds were followed by storms, that mattered. If you noticed that particular animal tracks meant danger was nearby, that mattered. If you noticed that eating a certain berry made people ill, you probably stopped eating the berry. Our brains evolved to connect things: cause, effect, pattern, meaning. But there's a downside to all that, because sometimes we actually end up finding connections that aren't really there. We see several unusual events and think, that can't be coincidence. Now, maybe it isn't, but equally, maybe it is. The important thing is that feeling that something is connected isn't evidence that it is connected. And this is where conspiracy theories become fascinating, because they often begin with real observations and something genuinely unusual has happened and information is missing. Officials give contradictory statements. Someone behaves strangely. There are unanswered questions, and our brains hate unanswered questions. So we start joining dots. The problem is sometimes the dots form a picture because there might really be a picture, but sometimes we draw the picture ourselves. And this is why intelligent people can believe different things when seeing the same event. Now, this leads to another misconception that I wanted to challenge when I started writing conspiracy. The misconception is the idea that people who believe strange things, who believe in conspiracy theories, must be stupid. They're not. Intelligence doesn't make you immune to bias. In fact, intelligent people can sometimes become extremely good at constructing sophisticated arguments for things they already believe, because none of us approaches information as a blank slate. We bring our experiences, our identities, our fears, our values, our communities, our previous beliefs, and our existing levels of trust, which is really important. Imagine two people reading exactly the same government statement, and one has spent their life believing that public institutions generally try to do the right thing, but the other has personally experienced an institution behaving dishonestly. Same statement, different history, different interpretation. And that's why simply throwing more facts at people doesn't often solve these disagreements, because underneath the disagreement about facts, there may actually be a disagreement about trust. And this is when skepticism becomes cynicism. Trust is complicated because governments do sometimes lie. We know that. Corporations definitely often conceal things. Institutions sometimes act to protect themselves. Experts sometimes get things wrong. Journalists make mistakes, scientists revise conclusions, history gives us plenty of reasons not to blindly accept everything we're told. So skepticism is healthy. In fact, I'd argue it's essential, but there's a trap, because skepticism can quietly mutate into cynicism, and the two aren't the same. Skepticism says, show me the evidence. Cynicism says, they're lying. Before even seeing the evidence, blind trust isn't critical thinking, but blind distrust isn't critical thinking either. They're mirror images, and both allow us to avoid the difficult work of actually examining the claim. Good skepticism leaves room for uncertainty. It says, I don't know yet. And those four words are incredibly powerful. And there is a question within all that that we don't like asking. And it's a question I think everyone should occasionally ask themselves, even though it is uncomfortable. The question is, what evidence would make me change my mind? Now think about something you believe strongly, whether it's political, social, historical, scientific, absolutely anything, and ask, what would I need to see to conclude that I'm wrong in the belief I currently have? If you can answer that question, great, your belief is potentially falsifiable. But if the answer is nothing, we've got a problem. Because now every piece of evidence can become evidence for the belief. Evidence supporting the theory proves it. Evidence contradicting the theory proves that somebody must be covering it up. The absence of evidence therefore proves how powerful the conspiracy must be. At that point, there is no possible route out, and that isn't an investigation, it's a closed system. Check your own side is kind of like the way I come at this. So the question that you need to ask is, do you demand the same quality of evidence from information you agree with as information you disagree with? Us, most of us don't. Somebody posts something supporting our existing worldview and we think, exactly, and we share it. someone posts something challenging it, and suddenly we're forensic investigators. What's the source? Who funded this research? What's their agenda? Where's the original data? We view it all with suspicion. Now, all those are actually excellent questions when asked in the right frame of mind. The mistake is only asking them of the other side. Critical thinking becomes genuinely useful when we turn it inward. And that's when we become willing to interrogate information that we want to be true rather than just accepting that it's true. That's a harder route to take, but it's also where better thinking begins. Now, within all that, we've also got the problems with algorithms and communities and the world we see. And that's this social media echo chamber that just very quickly builds around our habits online. And very quickly, algorithms sort themselves out along the lines of, oh, this person is interested in this, and therefore I'm going to find every single post that's ever been done on this subject to support, to get this person continually reading and looking at the adverts. But that echo chamber is really unhealthy. I guess it comes down, I mean, this is something our ancestors never had to contend with, the social media and the way that it builds everything. So we have these personalized information environments. Two people can open their phones on the same morning and encounter completely different versions of the world. Different stories, different controversies, different voices, different apparent priorities. Algorithms aren't necessarily sitting there plotting to brainwash us, but digital platforms do have a powerful set of incentives to keep our attention, and emotionally engaging information tends to do that rather well. Outrage works, for example, fear works, surprise works, confirmation works, and gradually we can find ourselves surrounded by information that makes our existing interpretation of reality feel increasingly obvious because of the algorithms. We feel everybody is talking about it, except everybody isn't. Everyone in your information environment is talking about it, that's true, but that is a very different thing from reality. So let's have a simple thinking tool then, something practical. The next time you encounter a claim that produces a strong emotional reaction, particularly one that immediately makes you think, I knew it, pause and ask five questions. One, what exactly is being claimed? Strip away the emotional language. Two, what is the evidence? Not who said it, what actually supports it? Three, where did the evidence originate? Can you get closer to the original source? Four, what alternative explanation might fit the same facts? You don't have to believe the alternative, but considering it will be of immense help in enabling you to critically judge the validity of what you've just read or heard. And then finally, five, what would change my mind? The final question keeps the door open, and keeping the door open is one of the most important habits in thinking. Because we can have curiosity without gullibility. So ultimately, we have to look for that balance. We need curiosity, because without curiosity, we simply accept whatever we're told. But curiosity without standards becomes gullibility. We need skepticism, because without skepticism, we're vulnerable to manipulation. But skepticism without openness becomes cynicism. We need confidence in our reasoning, but confidence without humility becomes certainty, a very dangerous place to be. So perhaps the goal isn't to become someone who always knows what's true, because nobody does. Perhaps the goal is to become someone who is simply better equipped to find out what is true. Someone capable of saying, this is what I currently believe. That's a very important word, currently believe. This is why I believe it. This is the evidence supporting that belief or that current belief. And this is what could persuade me that I'm wrong in my current belief. That's a much stronger intellectual position than certainty. And that brings me back to the reason today's episode is a little different. My new book, Conspiracy: Waking Up to the Systems That Shape How You Think, Feel and Act, is out this week. There are conspiracy theories in it. Some famous ones, some uncomfortable ones, some fascinating ones. But the book isn't designed to give you a list marked true and false, because I don't think that's the most interesting conversation. The interesting conversation is what happens underneath. Why did we believe it? Why did we reject it? Who did we trust? What evidence persuaded us? What role did our identity play? What role did our community play? What role did the information environment itself play? And were we genuinely investigating or looking for reasons to confirm something that we'd already decided? Because those questions matter far beyond conspiracy theories. They matter in politics, they matter in business, they matter in media, they matter in relationships, communities, and increasingly in everyday life. We live in a world full of people who want to tell us what to think. I'm not interested in joining them. I'd rather help people become better at thinking for themselves. So if there's one idea I'd like you to really take away from today's episode, it's this. Don't just question what you believe, question how you came to believe it. Conspiracy: Waking Up to the Systems That Shape How You Think, Feel and Act is published this week. And if this episode has made you curious, not just about the conspiracy theories themselves, but about the machinery of belief itself, then that's exactly the journey the book continues. But whether you read it or not, above all else, stay curious, stay skeptical, stay open to being wrong, and keep asking better questions. Because conspiracy doesn't ask you to believe me, it asks you to become better at deciding what you believe and why. And as always, there is a corresponding post for you to come and comment in. Come and tell me your favourite conspiracy theories and why you believe them or why you disbelieve them. And ask me questions about how you can be, you know, maybe work on improving how you look at some of these subjects and some of these theories, and how you can critically judge for yourself whether or not there's validity in the statements that you are reading. I would love to have an open conversation with people, so come and join me in the community group. If you go to darreninform.com/thinkworks, the full address is in the bit that follows with D in a minute, and I'll be out there asking other questions and talking about the book in other forums as well. So come and join us for that. And if you want to buy the book, fantastic. If you completely disagree with me and don't want to buy the book, then just ask yourself the question, why do you disagree with me, and see if you can work it out, the particular reason why. Not because you think I'm wrong, but why do you think I'm wrong? It's a subtly different question. Thanks, everyone. Take care. I'll see you all next week.
Thank you for listening to ThinkWorks. Don't forget you can join in the conversation by visiting darreninform.com/community and finding the corresponding post for this episode. You've been listening to ThinkWorks, the podcast for thinkers.